Blog Talk Radio.
Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview, brought to you today by The Fitness Buff Show, the leanest, fastest hour on radio. Check it out online at fitnessbuffshow.com and start getting fitter and faster today. Jim Melvin has been a friend of mine for more than 20 years, and for as long as I've known him, his driving interest has been writing an epic fantasy series, something that might find shelf space alongside J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings trilogy. But life kept getting in the way. He was married, raised two wonderful daughters, had a full-time job as an editor at the St. Petersburg Times, and did all the other good stuff that eats up time and interferes with achieving those very personal dreams we all entertain. But that's life, right? Well, a few years ago, Jim decided it was now or never. He retired from the newspaper, took his family and savings, moved to North Carolina. He put everything else aside to fulfill what he believed to be his destiny and nearly 2,000 pages that became the Death Wizard Chronicles. The first book in the six-book epic fantasy was released in September by Rain Publishing, and a new installment will be delivered to bookstores every 30 days until the entire series is available in February 2008. It's a hell of a story, a hell of a series, and Jim Melvin is a hell of a guy. Jim, welcome.
Bob, thanks very much. That's a great introduction. In fact, you've said it all.
Well, and now we're done. And I hope I don't owe you any more money.
No, I just need to type that up and send it around.
Well, Jim, to quote everyone who knows you personally and your story, let me ask this as plainly as possible. What the hell were you thinking? I mean, you gambled an awful lot on your imagination.
Well, you know, Bob, I think it was sort of something that built up over 25 years. I've been, you know, when I would get in the shower, when I'd drive in the car, when I would fall asleep at night, I would think about this series. And it, to me, it felt like this is what Jim Melvin was to create this series. And so many people have dreams in their lives that they're never able to achieve because of the reality of living and working and raising families and mowing the yard and, you know, maybe taking a break at night to watch a little TV, that their dreams are set aside. And I had an opportunity to, you know, to live off savings for a couple of years and to take this risk. And rather than, you know, bank the savings and retire at age 62 and write the book then, I wanted to do it in my late 40s when I had at least a little bit of youth left. I wanted to be able to look in the mirror and tell myself, you know, you gave it your best shot.
That you can affirm to people that I did not exaggerate here. This has been living inside of you for years. I mean, and pretty much everyone who's known you, family, friends, coworkers, has been aware of this, right?
It's actually been living inside of me probably since I was a little boy. And I grew up in St. Petersburg, Florida, and I lived on a little island called Coquina Key. And I was lucky to live on a street that had quite a few, you know, boys my age. And like a lot of boys, we played football and baseball, and we ran around all day long, especially during the summer. But one thing we did was we played a lot of imaginary games, and we would get together, 5-10 of us, and play for hours. And a lot of it was based on things like shows of that time period back in the late 60s and early 70s, like The Man from U.N.C.L.E. and Lost in Space. And my imagination was always just tantalized by fantasy and superheroes and magical powers. And so the Death Wizard Chronicles really were born then.
Had you written any of this as a teen, in college, any of that kind of stuff, or did it all come after you retired?
Well, when I was a teenager, about the age, say, a junior in high school, when you're really finally starting to try to take seriously what you're going to do with your life, it just hit me really hard that I wanted to become a best-selling novelist. And I remember even back then when I was, 16, 17 years old, I was going around and telling people that I was going to be a best-selling novelist and I was going to make $75 million. And that's in, you know, mid-1970s, so that's probably $300 million in today's dollars. And so then I thought, well, you know, I'm not a rich person now. I need to make a living at least until the first novel hits big. What should I do? Well, I decided then to become a journalist, because journalists write, you know, I learned the craft of writing, even though at that point when I was young, I was so arrogant, I really didn't think I needed to learn the craft of writing. And I actually wrote a novel. It was a horror story, kind of a Stephen King type thing. Stephen King was just coming out at that point, and shopped it around some, and it came actually relatively close to being published. But at the time, you know, all writers hear this. It's usually not the first book that hits it big. It's the second or third book that hits it big. So I wasn't really concerned that the first book didn't get published. I knew the second one would. Only then I began working 50-hour weeks and six-day weeks, and I got married, and I had kids, and I had a house to take care of, and there never was a second book. But for 25 years, the Death Wizard Chronicles were in my mind, and I did try to attempt to write it several times. I would get 30 or 40 or 50 pages into it, and then just it would stop. I would either lose momentum or I didn't like what I was doing. As it turned out, the real reason I didn't write it wasn't the excuse of working too hard or having a family. It was that I really, as a writer and as a person, wasn't ready for it. And journalism and living my life, and you know, journalists, as you well know, you meet a lot of people and you have a lot of experiences and you learn a lot of things. You do learn the craft of writing. And over the years, I became a more worldly, more mature person, more capable of this. And so actually, in the long run, it really turned out for the best, because now is my time.
Yeah, I'm recalling as you're saying that in the years, a couple of years before you retired from the newspaper, that I correct me if I'm wrong, you had taken kind of an interest in Eastern philosophy and things like that. Is that, am I on the right track here?
That's correct, actually. The Death Wizard Chronicles actually were based on Eastern philosophy even before I knew much about Eastern philosophy. It's just sort of a coincidence, but I got divorced and remarried, and my second wife was a longtime Buddhist, and she introduced me to Buddhism, and it was a religion that I really embraced, and not so much from a an everyday, how do I put this? I embraced the religion in a philosophical sense. It really spoke to me in terms of, you know, the tools it offers to live your life, and once that happened, I think all the pieces fell into place.
And I think it's in the very first book, The Pit, there's even a reference to karma, I think I saw.
Right. Karma, in the Buddhist sense, is the philosophy that all of your actions, whether good, bad, or neutral, have effects. You know, good actions create happiness, bad actions create unhappiness, and neutral actions basically don't do anything. And what you are is an accumulation of your karma. And one of the also other aspects of Buddhism that most attracts Westerners to Buddhism is meditation. Through meditation, you're able to relax, you know, slow your heart rate, and also begin to see certain truths that are all intertwined in Buddhism. My main character is called a death wizard because he's able to meditate so deeply that he literally stops his heart and temporarily dies. And there have been studies with Tibetan monks that have shown that when they're, you know, and through long stretches of meditation, they can slow their heart rate to like under 10 beats per minute or even less. Well, my character can take that to the extreme. And when he dies, he temporarily enters the realm of death and enriches himself with magical powers.
Well, since you mentioned the Death Wizard, why don't you, this might be a good time to tell people listening and reading, tell us a little something about the series. I mean, six books, that's and you can't use the whole half hour for the synopsis.
Well, it's difficult to give a fantasy synopsis, and I'll tell you why, but imagine giving a synopsis for Lord of the Rings. You would say, very short people with hairy feet save the world from monsters. You know, that doesn't sound that interesting, but I'll give it a shot. My series is, as you said, is six books. It's about 700,000 words, which sounds like a ton, and I guess is, but there's a lot of fantasy, very popular fantasy written nowadays that is quite a bit longer. For instance, there's someone named Steven Erickson who's doing a 10-book series called The Malaysian Book of the Fallen, and each one of his books are about 300,000 words. So 700,000 words nowadays is pretty average in the fantasy world. But at any rate, my series involves a character who is called a death wizard, and actually throughout the series he's actually more accurately called a death knower. And he's called a death knower because he literally dies and returns. He has seen what happens when you die. And none of us, of course, have ever done that. And it's the crux of being a human being is being aware that we're of our own mortality. The evil character that he combats throughout the series is called a sun god. And he's called that because he derives his power from sunlight. You know, if you get into the world of Carl Sagan, you know, suns and stars are the creators of life in the universe. You know, our bodies are made of things that come from the stars. So this creates a paradox in my series in that the good character is based on death, which human beings traditionally see as being a bad thing, and the evil character is based on life, which human beings traditionally see as a good thing. And the entire series revolves around that paradox with a lot going on between the lines.
And folks, as I said, he's been thinking about this for a long time. So, Jim, are any of these characters, are they based on real life? Is there anybody that you want dead?
Well, Torg, my main character, is 7 feet tall and weighs 300 pounds, is really good looking, so I based him on me. I would say that none of the characters are really based on anyone I know, obviously all of your life experiences create characters that you write, but they're not based on people that I know, but they are characters that very intensely, and I'm sure this happens to most writers, but very intensely I've grown to love them. And in fact, right now I'm in the editing process of book 6, and when that completes, I'm going to feel kind of sad. I'm going to feel like I've lost some family. But the series, for the most part, the series takes place over 1,000 years, but the vast majority of the series really only takes place over about a 4-month period. Anytime in fantasy, when you write fantasy, you have to try your best to interweave backstory, because backstory creates context that gives your characters, you know, meaning. But once I've gotten most of the backstory out of the way, it's really just a roller coaster ride to the finish of good versus evil, you know, wars, fortresses, castles, monsters, vast amounts of magical power. And it's kind of, you know, sexy too and R-rated. So I definitely, you know, this is not Harry Potter. This is not recommended for kids or even young adults. This is an adult R-rated series, which again, a lot of the most popular fantasy nowadays is.
Well, and I wanted to ask you about that because you're a dad, and you're a dad a second time around. You know, what is an appropriate age group? Are we thinking, you know, you need to be at least in college or high school to read this?
Well, you know, as we all know, some 15-year-olds are as mature as 25 and vice versa, but I would certainly say 18 and above. And I'm sure there are adults who are very conservative who would find this, you know, at least mildly offensive, and then there are young adults who probably wouldn't. But I would certainly recommend 18 and above. I'm not out to offend anyone, and I want to be honest up front. You never, of course, want to lose potential customers, but I don't want to offend anyone either.
Right. I mean, you mentioned this. There is some rougher sexual content.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. When you write sexual scenes, you know, you're writing it just like you write anything else. You're writing it one word at a time, one page at a time, and you're dissecting it in a very kind of bland, scientific sense. So when you're writing it, it seems not the least bit offensive. But then you find when people read it, it has a much different effect on them than it did as you as the writer, and it's kind of surprising. And I'm just going to have to wait and see how that plays out.
Did you, you know, once you got to the third and the fourth book and then the fifth and the sixth, did you have to go back to the first couple of books and make some some tweaks? Did you find your style changing, or was it meshing, or as from the writing point of view, how did you adapt?
Well, that's a very good question, actually, and it's a good question mainly for the reason that this really is my debut as a novelist, and it's not. I didn't have 15 novels under my belt and a style firmly established. I certainly had a style established as a writer because I'd written a lot for the newspaper, but fiction is a different animal. And so my style did evolve, and in fact, you never want to sell yourself short, but this series actually gets better as it goes along. Book two is better than book one, book three is better than book two, all the way across the board. Part of that probably is because my style evolved. Another part of it is just the way the story goes, and also because the first two books, and especially book one, had to have more backstory, which tends to slow things down a little bit. But and the bad news for me early on, once I got my agent, was that I began getting rejections from the first wave of large publishers. And large publishers nowadays, first-time fiction is a very difficult sell. They might have one opening a year for 5,000 or more, entries. But the good news was, because it took me, two or three years to finally secure a publisher, it gave me the time to go back into, I could be in the middle of book four and then go back into book one and add some foreshadowing or change something or tweak something or decide, okay, this character in book one isn't quite as consistent as he is in book four. And so now the quality of book one in that regard is as strong as book six. And a lot of fantasy writers, especially the big guys who are releasing one after another and, book one is out and while they're writing book two, can't go back into book one and can't go back into book two. And so I've been able to do that, and it's created a very strong sense of continuity.
How much of the book was written before your agent started trying to sell it, and how much of it was written by the time it finally sold?
When I first started the series, as I've said now several times in the interview, I've played it out over and over in my mind, and I knew scenes and I knew characters, and it really started to pour out of me. But still, I didn't start out knowing that I had a six-book series. I thought that I actually might have had only one very long book, like about 1,000 to 1,200 page book. And I knew that I wanted to write a long prologue, maybe about a 30-page prologue. Well, the 30-page prologue became book one, which is 300 pages. So that's when I knew things were starting to develop. Well, as soon as I finished book one, I began querying agents and very quickly got one. And so I started book one in September of 2004 and secured an agent in February of 2005.
And how much was written at that point?
At that point, 300 pages were written.
Okay.
Which book one is by far the shortest of the books. It's only 300 pages. The rest of the books are all about 500 pages or 525, 550 range. So only 300 pages were written, and I think that was part of the reason that it was a tough sell to the major publishers because, again, I'm a first-time guy. Not only are they taking a risk with a first-timer, but they're even taking a risk that I'm going to finish it.
And by the time Rain Publishing signed on?
I signed my contract with Rain in March of this year. By that point, I had written the first draft, I believe, of book five.
Wow. So they knew what they were getting, and you knew what you had.
Exactly. And, exactly.
So I have to ask, after all those years of waiting and dreaming about what it was going to be like to hold a Jim Melvin novel in hand, how did it feel? What was that day like when the book arrived for the first time?
Well, you actually said something to me when you and I were talking several years ago about this, about how when you're finished with a book, you're really not finished. It's just the beginning of the work. So I assume that everyone would think that when you're holding the book in your hand that it's this incredible, marvelous experience. And it is in some regards, but your mind is so occupied with all the other things you have to do that you still almost don't feel like it's finished because you know how much hard work it's going to be to get people to you know, even know that the book exists and to read it.
So you're just getting started with all that. You're starting the interviews. You're going to start doing book festivals and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm in one book festival already. I'm close to two others. I've got, I believe, six or seven book appearances, and I've got another three or four that, you know, are virtually official. I also have a lot of friends in the newspaper business all over the country. I've been contacting friends in hopes of getting, you know, first in line in terms of reviews and features. It's all starting right now, and unless, again, you're with one of the mega publishers who have the mega marketing machines behind them, there's a lot of marketing involved. There's a lot of hard work both by your publisher and by you, and the more work you put into it and the harder you go at it, the better things are going to be. All that said, it's going to be several months before I really see how much this pays off in terms in the tangible sense.
Did you ever think about just writing a simple novel instead of, you know, and here's 300 pages and it shows that I can write a beginning, a middle, and an end, rather than commit? I mean, holy cow! I still, you know, we talk about it almost casually, but I mean, the decision you made to just put everything aside and commit to this thing, it's really an amazing story.
Well, thank you. And that goes back to what we discussed earlier about having this opportunity to sort of step out of the rat race. I had really been in the rat race, in my opinion, since about 12 years old. I started mowing yards when I was 12 years old, and then I started frying chicken, and then I started working at restaurants, and I went through college in about 3.5 years and went to work at age 20, and I was in the rat race, like I say, from age 12. Well, now suddenly here I am about 46, and I don't have to work. And I said to myself, Jim, if there's ever a time that you're going to achieve your dream and write the story that you want to write, now is the time. Do not blow this. And I didn't. That said, once the series is done, I think I'm going to do exactly what you just suggested. My next book, I think, is going to be a relatively average-length standalone, probably either in the horror genre or, you know, nowadays, apparently vampires and werewolves and that kind of thing are really popular and easy sells. So that will probably be my next project. I'm definitely not going to write another six-book series unless the Death Wizard Chronicles were to become a big hit and then prequels and sequels were requested. I would certainly love to do that.
Sounds like fun. Sounds like a good thing. How did you how did you deal with people over the last couple of years as you weren't writing? Because I'm sure you know, as people, I mean, as you were writing, but you weren't working at a traditional kind of thing. I'm sure people ask, well, what do you do? And you're like, well, I stay home and I type.
Well, basically, I immediately started calling myself a novelist, which I guess is accurate. I didn't necessarily say published novelist, but I said novelist, and that became my identity, and that actually felt really good to me because, like I said, basically from certainly my junior and high school year on, that's who I was. I really wasn't a journalist. I wasn't a reporter. I wasn't a designer. I wasn't a supervisor. I was a novelist, and it felt good to say that.
Well, Jim, I know that all of your former coworkers and your friends are very proud of you and very excited for what you've accomplished here, and I know they all hope that things go very well for you. You sell a lot of books, and I just want to thank you for joining us so much today.
Bob, thank you very much. You've also been a good friend and a lot of help.
Folks, you can check out Jim Melvin's website for the Death Wizard Chronicles at deathwizardchronicles.blogspot.com. And if you'd like to keep up with Mr. Media's Friday interviews, you can subscribe to the site via email at www.mrmedia.com. You can also subscribe to the audio feed in the podcast section of iTunes. Thanks for joining us. Please come back next week for another Fridays with Mr. Media.